Good morning. May it please the Court. Dean Sandiford, this time for Gerald Villarreal. The parties agree that the unit of prosecution for assault with a dangerous weapon is the number of assaultive acts, not the number of victims. Given that, for two independent reasons, two of Mr. Villarreal's convictions for that offense have to be vacated. First reason is the evidence was insufficient to show three separate assaults, one for each count. But even if the evidence were sufficient, the jury was never instructed that it had to find a separate assault for each count. Review on this issue is for plain error, but we meet all four requirements of that test. To start with the evidence, four witnesses testified about this incident, and only two of them, the two boys, even testified that Mr. Villarreal pointed a gun at all. Their testimony was very general, that he pointed the gun at us, that he pointed the gun at me and my family. That's not specific enough to establish three separate assaults, at least for an inference, beyond a reasonable doubt by the jury.
Why isn't it specific enough when two of the boys say he pointed the gun at me?
Well, because the boys both say he pointed the gun at me and my family.
They're not mutually exclusive. You could do both.
They're not.
And they testified that he pointed at the whole family and that they pointed at me, and that he pointed at me.
Right. The problem with that testimony, I mean, it's not a problem with the testimony, but why it doesn't amount to proof beyond a reasonable doubt is that it's susceptible to different inferences. There's no way for the jury to read that testimony to discern whether they were separate individual acts or one act directed at everyone. And we know that a single act directed at multiple people is a single assault. That's the hypothetical in Ladner. And that's all the jury can really find here. It has to be an inference beyond a reasonable doubt. I know we give the government benefit of all the reasonable inferences, but it has to be an inference that the jury can reach with a high level of confidence.
Wasn't there evidence that he was within arm's length of them?
No, well, not really. There was a cop who testified about a statement that was given outside of court. And what he testifies to is that at some point he was within arm's length, but he said the witnesses that he spoke to didn't even say he pointed a gun at all. In fact, said he hadn't.
And he lined them up.
Yes.
And he was initially behind them.
Right.
And that was after he had threatened to shoot them when they hadn't found the key.
I don't think that's how the testimony from the witnesses played out. I think it was he lined them up, he threatened to shoot them, then two witnesses say he walks in front of them and points the gun.
Okay, well, he's behind them
mm-hmm.
with a gun, and he goes, walks around, doesn't he?
According to two witnesses, yes.
Isn't it reasonable to infer that he has the gun out? Well, he's walking around them, pointing it at every one of them.
Well, the witnesses didn't testify to that. Only two of the witnesses said he pointed the gun at all, and both of them say he pointed at them when he was in front of them.
Who testified that he started behind them when he lined them up?
All of the witnesses, I think, said he started behind them.
Okay. Isn't it a fair inference he had the gun out? I'm virtually certain that there was testimony that he threatened before that to shoot them. When he lined them up, he'd already threatened to shoot them.
I could be wrong, but that wasn't my understanding of the record. But in any event, you know, even if the evidence were sufficient, we still have the instructional error. And on that, our evidentiary burden is much, much lower. We don't have to show that no rational jury could find three separate assaults, or even that it's more likely than not that the jury would have. All we have to show is that a probability sufficient to undermine confidence that the jury would have made that finding.
So it's not the charges language that you oppose. In other words, these three first counts, you don't say there's a missing element or
no.
Something. Instead, you turn to the jury instruction. And what is it that you think the jury instruction needed to say?
I think the jury instruction needed to say something along the lines of, there are three counts of assault with a dangerous weapon. For each count, you have to find a separate act of assault against each victim. Because that's the unit of prosecution.
Isn't that the clear inference from the instruction that defense counsel requested?
The separate counts instruction?
Uh-huh.
No, it's not. What that instruction is saying is you can't find him guilty of count A because you think he's guilty of count B. You have to remember that there's other counts here that we're not challenging on appeal, most notably this choking incident. So what this instruction was for is saying, if you find him guilty on the choking incident, you can't also find him guilty on the weapons. The very last sentence says
that. It's not that specific. It says a separate crime is charged against the defendant in each count. The first three counts were separate counts against the wife, son one, son two.
Sure.
Right? Those are also included in this.
Absolutely.
You must separately consider the evidence against the defendant on each count and return a separate verdict for each. Your verdict as to any one count, whether it is guilty or not, should not influence your verdict as to any other count, i.e., if you find him not guilty with respect to wife, that doesn't mean you don't have to find him not guilty with respect to the two boys.
That's right, and I don't disagree with that reading of the instruction. I think what that's saying, it's an anti-propensity instruction. Don't find him guilty of this one just because you found him guilty of the other. Saying to the jury you need to separately consider the evidence on each count isn't telling the jury that the evidence is different for each count, and the prosecutor argued that the evidence was exactly identical for each count. So that instruction doesn't say what it needed to say.
But they were also told, and they were also instructed, in separate counts that they had to find beyond a reasonable doubt that he was guilty of shooting one count, two count, three counts, three different people.
The instructions didn't say that. What the assault instructions required the jury to find that he put each of the victims in reasonable fear of bodily harm. That can occur by one act. If you point a gun at three people, you're putting all of them in reasonable fear of bodily harm.
But you have to look at it in the context of what he did. He was behind them. He lined them up. He walked around to the front with his gun out, right? Is he going to do that with a gun behind his back?
Well, maybe even if he had his gun out, I think what you have to, what the jury would have had to find if it had been correctly instructed, beyond a reasonable doubt, is that it was a separate and discrete act of assault as to each victim. Even if the, excuse me.
Let me help you out. The instructions given would have been identical if the unit of prosecution was different. If the unit of prosecution was the number of people who felt assaulted. So if I pointed a gun at the audience here, everybody there would feel assaulted.
Right.
And I could be convicted on the instructions here of 8 different crimes. And that's the point, I think, that you're...
Thank you. It is the point I'm trying to make. It's exactly
but
right.
But you didn't argue that below. It wasn't preserved.
No, it wasn't preserved.
So the government argues that it's you fail on the second prong of plain error because there's not clearly clear law that that is the unit of prosecution. And it's not obvious to me that the conceded unit of prosecution is correct. If I placed a bomb here under federal law, well, the bombing at the Boston Marathon, there was one act. It killed and maimed a lot of people, and there were multiple counts from that. Why is it plain error here?
Well, I don't know what the crime was in that, and it obviously the unit of prosecution depends
well,
on analysis.
In a lot of crimes, it's the number of victims. It's not the number of acts. It's the number of victims.
It can be, but I think the cases that we discuss in our brief show that it has to be very, very clear that it's the number of victims for it to be the number of victims.
Well, there's one old case when the Supreme Court was much more inclined to use the leniency doctrine than it is now. I'm not sure what it's done in other areas, but that doesn't strike me as a conclusive argument.
Well, we're certainly not relying only on that Supreme Court case. I mean, we're relying on cases from this court that are much more recent. Jackson being one, the statute makes it a crime to kill any person while fleeing from a bank robbery. And this court said, unit of prosecution, if you kill two people in a crash, it's the act, despite the fact that the statute says killing any person, which suggests the congressional focus on the victim. We don't have language like that in this statute. It just says assault with a dangerous weapon. That's
and
it.
We don't know what the statute means with respect to unit prosecution because there aren't any cases, right?
Well, there aren't any cases, but we do know that it has to be one of the elements. There's no element in this statute that's centered on the victim. And the only element that could plausibly be the unit of prosecution is the act of assault. The only other two elements
are...
Can
we say it's absolutely plain when there's no interpretation?
I think it is based on the statutory language, but even if it's not, then I think it's plain based on the case law, where this Court and the Supreme Court, some of the Supreme Court cases are dated, so I'll rely more on the ones in the Tenth Circuit. Statutes that are much more suggestive of a victim-centered approach, this Court has consistently interpreted the unit of prosecution to be the act of assault.
Are there any federal cases where the unit of prosecution is the number of victims that you're aware of? Are there any? If we're looking at bookends, are there any bookends on the other side?
You know, I didn't find any. And I focused on the Tenth Circuit and the Supreme Court. I looked for murder because that seems to be the one where you would think the number of victims, and just couldn't find any cases on that. But if you look at cases like Rents, you look at cases like Jackson, these are statutes that suggested fairly strongly in some of its language that the unit of prosecution would be the victim. Nevertheless, the Court said, it's the act. Those cases were harder than this one, based on the statutory language. If those cases came out with the act being the unit of prosecution, the same has to be true of these. And that's even if you disregard Bell and Ladner, the old Supreme Court cases. That's just recent cases from this Court, Rents and Jackson being, I think, the best ones for us.
He didn't have to point the gun at anyone to be guilty of this crime, correct?
Not necessarily. That was the government's theory, but you can threaten someone with a gun without actually pointing it at them.
By extending it perpendicularly to your body and saying, I'm going to kill you all. That's one way. Another would be to have it at your side and say that. That would be sufficient, wouldn't it?
Absolutely, that would be
right?
sufficient.
So if he said, I'm going to kill all of you, that's one thing. What if he said, I'm going to kill you, your name, I'm going to kill you, your name, I'm going to kill you, your name, and they individually feel assaulted? Is that enough?
Certainly under plain error, I think that would be enough.
Okay. Do we know what he said? Did he say all of you every time, or was there enough there to suggest that he was talking about killing them individually?
The testimony of the witnesses was more general than that. He pointed the gun at us.
Uh-huh.
And we know from...
Not two of the witnesses. Two of the witnesses say he pointed it at me.
Well, they said me and my family, and it was together. So I think that fundamentally means the same thing as us. But again, even if the evidence is sufficient, we have a much lighter burden on plain error review on the prejudice prong for the instructional error. We don't have to show that no rational jury could find. The evidence has to be so strong that you can have confidence that the jury would have found three assaults, and the evidence certainly isn't strong enough for that. Unless the Court has further questions, I'll reserve the remainder of my time. Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. My name is Christopher Houghton, and I'm an Assistant United States Attorney in Albuquerque in the District of New Mexico. The United States asked this Court to affirm the lower court because the record reflects that the defendant intentionally, at gunpoint, ordered his family, eight members of his family, into an execution line. They assembled side by side, and he walked behind each of them. He continued around one side and in front. He told him, I should kill you all, you're not worth an expletive. And then he raised the weapon at perpendicular to his body and pointed it directly at each member of his family.
Well,
the court.
What's the evidence to support that he pointed, that he moved the gun, he pointed there, 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 and there?
Your Honor, if the court looks at Volume 3, page 404 to 405, there was this exchange with John Doe 1, which is Ricky Villarreal.
What was the page again?
404 to 405. There was this back and forth exchange with the prosecutor and John Doe 1. Question, did you think he was going to shoot you that day in August of 2010? Answer, yes. Question, how did his voice sound? Answer, angry. Question, what color was the gun? Answer, black. Question, did you see it pointed at you? Answer, yes. Did you see it pointed at the rest of your family? Answer, yes. John Doe 2 testified similarly, although slightly stronger. This is same volume, page 421. Question, did he point it, talking about the gun, directly at you? Answer, yes. Question, and your family? Answer, yes. Did you feel like he was going to shoot you? Yes, I did.
So why isn't Mr. Sanderford right? That could be a sweeping motion.
It's possible it could be a sweeping motion, Your Honor, and I don't think that's determinative.
Why didn't that get clarified when they were testifying so we know? Because obviously if he's pointing the gun at each one, and that's a different situation.
Why didn't it get clarified how he was walking in
front of them? Asking the witnesses. You say that he pointed it at your family. Describe that. Did he hold the firearm on anyone in particular for any period of time?
I was not the trial attorney. Looking at the record, though, reflects on what was happening at the trial. These were young children. Their father was in the courtroom. There's some evidence of this in closing about how hard it was for the boys, particularly John Doe 1, to get any of these words out in testimony. And so what I think the prosecution eventually resorted to was asking them directly questions like this, did he point it directly at you, and getting certain responses. The sentencing judge, who was a trial judge as well, Judge Vasquez, also sort of discussed that in her basis for the sentence in this case, about how difficult and how impaired these children were. The closing also reflected how much Wanda Quintana was falling apart on the stand. She was hysterical at some points.
Was there any discussion in closing or by the judge about any gestures or anything like that made by the witnesses as they're testifying? Because the jury could have seen something quite different from what the record reflects. Do we know that?
Are you asking in closing whether there was any reference to motions?
For example, the prosecutor said, did you see how so-and-so said yes, he went like this. Or the judge made any reference to that. Do we have anything like that to maybe include the gestures of the witnesses as part of the record?
In my review of the record, the only time I saw anyone describing the gesture was, I think, on cross-examination of one of the boys, where the defense attorney was asking him, okay, you said on direct he pointed it at you. Well, how do you point at you? Where do you point at you? And he sort of suggested at your feet. And he said, no, at our chest. And so I think that was the only time where there was a question about how the gun was pointed and where on the body it was pointed. And sort of the defense attorney, in asking that question, described how the arm of Mr. Villarreal was extended perpendicular to his body. The only other place that I see where something was described or depicted was when the government was asking, and this sort of came up on Mr. Sanderford's oral argument as well, asking the police officer, Eric Johnson, about how far they were apart. He was talking about three exhibits, Exhibit 11, 12, and 13, which were depicted Mr. Villarreal standing at, or I guess depicted an officer standing apart from the boys. And so he was asking him, if you look at this exhibit, how far apart were there? Is this accurate? Later, when the boys testified, they testified that that was an accurate depiction of the distance.
And where the exhibits are in the record?
The exhibit is not in the record. All there is a description of it, and
was it sticker?
And both witnesses confirmed.
Showing people what was the exhibit?
The exhibit was a photograph, as I take it. It was a photograph of a sort of dramatization of the execution line. It depicted the two boys of the line and showed an officer with his arm extended towards the boys a certain distance away from them.
And even if it wasn't admitted to evidence, it still wasn't preserved, so we don't know what that exhibit showed?
That's right, Your Honor. That's right. That's correct.
Wow. Is that standard practice? If a witness says that exhibit accurately depicts things and we have no idea what that exhibit is, I don't know how we can evaluate the testimony.
Well, the exhibit was described by Lieutenant Johnson. And so he says sort of arm's length distance, and he had his arm extended perpendicular to his body. So there was a description of what the exhibit
was.
How
do we know that it was? How do we know he had his arm extended perpendicular to his body?
Officer Johnson said that he did.
Okay. So he described the exhibit as all the members of the family standing at arm's length from one another?
He described the exhibits as the boys showing him how far away Mr. Villarreal was from him and how he was extending his arm.
Oh, how far? Okay, how far the defendant was from the child.
Just those two points. Later, when the boys testified, they confirmed that yes, that is accurate, the picture. And so, the description of the picture is in the record. It's okay. Part of the record, which is just one point I wanted to make, that doesn't just come from Lieutenant Johnson. It was actually confirmed by the boys as well. I just wanted to remind the court as well that under the sufficiency of the evidence review, this court has talked considerably about the deference it owes to the jury, that it doesn't substitute itself for the jury, that it doesn't look for ambiguity or conflicting testimony, that it views the evidence in the light most favorable, and that's direct and circumstantial evidence and reasonable inferences to be drawn therefrom. When the court does that honestly in this case, there is direct testimony about how Mr. Villarreal pointed the weapon directly at his family members. There's testimony that he walked behind them. There's actually testimony from one of the boys that as soon as they exited the vehicle, he was already carrying the gun in his hand. So when they first went back to the target shooting range, and he first got out of the car, he was already upset about losing the keys. He already had the pistol drawn in his hand. And so it's not much of an inference that Judge Seymour was making that when he walked behind them after he ordered them into the execution line, that he had the gun still in his hand. Taking the intent of what he said, I should kill all of you, along with the physical actions that he then engaged in to menacingly walk behind each of the members who had assembled side by side, impresses upon them, which I think was his intent, as the words he spoke reflect, that he intended to impress upon them that they were about to be executed. And he told them, and this is in Wanda Quintana's testimony, that I should kill you all and leave you here so that no one will find you, including your family. So it's not just the pointing of the weapons that I think this court could look at to determine that there's sufficient evidence to support the three counts that Mr. Villarreal was ultimately convicted of. It's the purposeful walking behind, ordering people into a line, and then walking in front of them, and then to cap it off, the pointing. But all of those things coupled together, when viewed in the light most favorable to the verdict, support convictions on counts 1, 2, and 3. And unless the court has further questions about that.
What do you say about the instructions?
Yeah.
I'll move on to the jury instruction.
Given your unit of prosecution concession, the instruction was wrong.
Given that concession, which we made in this case because the theory of the prosecution here was conservative, it was never that each victim gets a count. Otherwise, there would have been more here. It was a conservative approach based on what the prosecution felt may be the likely outcome in a case like this about what the prosecution is.
But even though that was the government's approach, it didn't suggest the sort of instruction that is missing here to make it clear what the unit of prosecution was.
And that's because, Your Honor, there's no pattern instruction here, and I think when the prosecution team looked at this jury instruction, as the court did and as the defense did below, everyone thought it was adequate, and everyone was proceeding on this theory that the prosecution was alleging three separate counts based on three separate assaultive acts. The fight was never about did he assault one person or maybe he only assaulted two. It was always about did he assault them at all.
But given everyone's understanding of the unit of prosecution, there was clearly error here then. There was plain error in not giving that instruction.
No, the United States disagrees that there was plain error here. I think if the court looks at these instructions, there were three tendered. Each instruction for count 1, 2, and 3, which I think were instructions 19 through 21, were specifically tailored to each victim.
Yeah, that's fine. If the unit of prosecution, this is what I mentioned earlier, was not the number of victims, but the number of acts. Excuse me, am I getting that backwards? You would have the same. You would have given the same instructions. If the unit of prosecution were the number of victims, if each victim of an assault, even if the assault was just one act, if the number of counts you have, number of crimes committed, is one for each victim, the instructions would have been exactly what they were here.
It's possible, with the exception of the separate.
It doesn't tell the jury that I need to find that each one was individually assaulted with a different act.
Well,
there's nothing in there.
Let me read the two parts that seem most helpful in the jury instruction. The first element says the defendant assaulted, then the victim's name.
Right, right.
By intentionally using a display of force that reasonably caused her to fear immediate bodily harm. That was with respect to Juan and Quintana. The third element also was tailored to the victim when it said the defendant acted with the intent to do bodily harm.
If the jury found that the defendant stood 20 yards away and pointed a cannon at all of them, you would have three convictions based on those instructions. The jury wouldn't know. Each of the victims could say, yeah, I thought he was going to blow me away. Yeah,
that's not what happened.
No. But in terms of the unit of prosecution, well, I shouldn't interrupt you. Did you want to?
No, I was just making a joke.
Yeah. No, if the jury found, and this is what defense counsel was arguing, that the evidence isn't that good in his view, and it could have just been one pointing that, you know, focused on everyone, maybe a sweep of the arm. So just one act.
What
if you're conceding that would only justify one conviction, then you have to concede that if the jury saw the evidence that way, they would still have convicted on three counts given these instructions.
So two additional points on that point before I'll move on to the plain part of the error, which I think the court has already identified the problem with that. That may be true on that instruction alone, what you're saying. But there was a separate instruction, and I think a layman reading that separate instruction and following it would have been finding in the way that you're suggesting would have contradicted that instruction.
Which instruction is that?
And that's the instruction that the defense asked for that the United States didn't object to, and it was ultimately admitted by the court. This is at
one saying take each victim separately?
Right. It says that your verdict as to any one count, whether it's guilty or not guilty, should not influence your verdict as to any other count. In other words, a guilty verdict on one count doesn't necessarily mean guilty verdict on another count. But in your example, it sure does, because the same cannon firing is the same event.
One of the people may not have actually seen it or felt threatened or whatever. So you still, I mean, even if in a bombing, you still have to, and there's one act, and I think you can get multiple prosecutions for that, depending on the number of victims, you still have to prove that X was a victim, Y was a victim, and so on.
And that may be true, Your Honor. I guess we disagree about reading that statute that instruction. Even if the court was persuaded that there was a hypothetical application of this instruction that would allow a jury to find in a way that violates double jeopardy, you still have to go through the prongs of plain error. The second prong is, was the error plain? I think the court's already identified there's no Supreme Court case, there's no Tenth Circuit case.
The argument defense counsel has made is he's not aware of any assault type offenses for which the unit of prosecution is the number of victims. I think my perception from reading the paper is that's incorrect with respect to the bombing in Boston, but I haven't checked that out. Do you have any federal statute that has been interpreted so that the unit of prosecution is the number of victims?
I don't, Your Honor, but what I do have is some indication in the federal district courts that this specific statute is being construed differently than what the defendant says now is the obvious way to construe it. And there's two recent cases out of the District of South Dakota in which district courts have found either that the unit of prosecution is victim-centric or that this statute could be constructed as dangerous weapon specific, because of course it says assault with a dangerous weapon. And so there's been some argument advanced that the way to charge it is to charge per dangerous weapon. So shod foot, bat, gun. And so there is some suggestion that courts in the federal judiciary are interpreting this statute differently than what he says. On the third prong, which I think is an impossible hurdle for the defense to jump over. The third prong is even harder, I think, in some ways. Because he has to show that there's a reasonable probability that given the instruction that he now tells the court he wants the jury to have heard, that there was a reasonable probability that they would have acquitted him of counts 2 and 3. And the fight down below was not whether he assaulted each of these three victims. The fight was whether he assaulted anyone at all, whether this execution line was completely made up by his family who was just out to get him. And so if they believed the government's theory of the case, which the verdict suggests that they did, given the instruction, they would have come out the exact same way. If you look at the closing argument, and this is just okay, one...
Try to wrap it up. You're 3 minutes over already.
Oh, yes, Your Honor. The last part I wanted to point the court to is if you look at the closing argument, the part where the defense says the evidence is exactly the same. I think the prosecutor was just orienting the jury to which episode. Was it the strangulation or the line? And then she goes to, in two separate times, recall the testimony of each of the victims, recalling how Mr. Villarreal pointed the weapon directly at me.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors.
I have just two quick points. Well, one has to do with kind of the way this case was tried below. I don't think it was tried on an assaultive act theory. I mean, what the prosecutor argued to the jury was that the evidence for all three of these counts was exactly identical. So that sounds to me like it's per victim theory. And there certainly wasn't any discussion. So I just, you know, this idea that this was always the theory, people thought the instructions covered it, I don't think is supported by the record. The second point I want to make is just
The defense was there was no assault.
Sure, the defense was that there was no assault, but the government's theory, at least not the way it was argued to the jury, wasn't that there were three separate assaults. The theory was that the evidence was exactly identical. If you find that he did this general thing described by the witnesses.
But if you put the evidence of him threatening ahead of time to shoot them, mm-hmm. get in a line, he's behind them, he's got his gun out ahead of time, and he's walking behind the line around the front with the gun out in front of each one of them. How is this plain error? That's my hang up.
Well, I think that maybe even if the evidence was sufficient, I'm going to focus more on the instructional error. You know, for the prejudice problem, you have to be confident that if the jury was correctly instructed, it would have found three separate assaults. Maybe there were, but maybe there weren't.
What undermines my confidence?
Because they just testified generally that he pointed the gun at us, at me and my family. None of these witnesses said...
At me.
And my family.
There's evidence that he walked.
Right.
The fair inference being he had his gun out when he was walking behind each one of them. He threatened ahead of time to shoot them.
That's right, but the jury would have to find separate, discrete assaults for each victim named in the indictment. And I think that the testimony could be construed, and I think the jury might well have construed it had it been asked to do so, to just think this was one general thing that all happened at once.
But it wasn't.
There was one assault.
To do so.
And that's why we're stuck on plain error review on that. But our burden on the evidence is just to say you can't be confident that the jury wouldn't have convicted had it been instructed on these three assaults.
If it had just been based on the words, he hadn't pointed the gun, but he had just said, I'm going to kill each one of you, and had the firearm in his hands. That's different than a sweeping motion with a gun with no words, right? To the victim.
Yeah, but that's still one assault. That's only one assault.
Even if the defendant here said, I'm going to kill you, wife, I'm going to kill you, John Doe 1, I'm going to kill you, John Doe 2.
That would be a closer situation. But if it's a single assault, a single threat directed at a group of people, that's a single assault. If the unit of prosecution, as we say, is the assault of
Well, action. What's the difference between I'm going to kill you, wife, John Doe 2, and saying I'm going to kill all of you?
Functionally, there's probably not much difference. But if the unit of prosecution is the assault of acts, then you have to have separate assaults. It's a fine distinction. I'm not arguing otherwise. But if the unit of prosecution is the assault of acts, there have to be separate acts. I see that I'm over.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. I just want to make one comment more to the AUSA, but it wasn't clear to me why you conceded the second prong of plain error on sufficiency of the evidence, but not on the instruction. You might want to check our precedent on that. Look at the footnote in, I can't remember what the name of the case was. Good. Yeah. Thank you very much. Interesting argument. We're going to take a recess of probably about 10 minutes. And.